Coming up on Midday is a live Main Street Radio special from St. Cloud State University. I'm Rachel Reeby. The minority population of this central Minnesota community is growing. So is racial tension. We'll ask city and university officials how they're addressing the problem of racism. We'll also hear from students and members of the minority community. During the second hour of our show, we'll talk about the refugees that have moved to rural Minnesota over the past 20 years from places like Bosnia, Ethiopia, Laos, Vietnam, and the former Soviet Union. How have they been accepted? Some communities, like the little Norwegian town of Pelican Rapids in Otter Tail County, have embraced this new diversity. Others have had a more difficult time adjusting. Our phone lines will be open for your questions and comments. It's all ahead on our two-hour Main Street special after the news.
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. The Pentagon says two U.S. airmen died today when their Apache attack helicopter crashed and burned in Albania. The men were on a training mission. This is the second chopper that's crashed in Albania since the Apaches were dispatched there in April. There's no word on the cause of the crash. Defense Secretary William Cohen says the United States is ready to release two captured Yugoslav soldiers. Cohen says their freedom is not a goodwill response to Yugoslav President Slobodan Milosevic, who released three U.S. soldiers last weekend.
I don't believe Mr. Milosevic has made any goodwill overture to us. He acts in accordance with what he thinks will serve his interests. And no amount of gestures on his part can in any way obscure or mask, as I've indicated before, the stench of evil that's emanating from the killing fields in Kosovo.
Cohen is in Europe with President Clinton. They will visit NATO headquarters in Brussels for a briefing on the NATO attack in Yugoslavia. The first group of Kosovar refugees to be housed in the United States will begin arriving this afternoon at Fort Dix, New Jersey. More than 400 Kosovars will stay at the military base until agencies can find them host families. NPR's Eric Westervelt reports.
The ethnic Albanians who arrived this evening are mostly women and children who do not have relatives in the U.S. and whose own families were torn apart by the Serbian purge of Kosovo. They departed Macedonia's largest refugee camp and will spend 3 to 6 weeks at the New Jersey base undergoing medical and background checks as sponsor families are found. First Lady Hillary Rodham Clinton and New Jersey Governor Christine Whitman will welcome the refugees. Mental health workers, doctors, and translators are also on hand to help them adjust to the U.S. The Clinton administration has pledged to let up to 20,000 refugees into the country. About 3,000 of them will be processed through Fort Dix. Military officials have tried to turn the base into a comfortable sanctuary with newly spruced up dorms, playrooms for children, and Fort Dix cooks are even being coached on how to prepare Albanian foods. Eric Westervelt, NPR News.
Authorities say tornado damage in the plains is reaching into the hundreds of millions of dollars. Some of the worst devastation can be found in Kansas and Oklahoma. Kansas Public Radio reporter Russell Lewis is in Wichita, Kansas, where he surveyed the devastation.
It is sort of what people expect living here in this part of the Midwest. You expect these types of storms to come through, but I don't think they were expecting the kind of devastation that they ultimately got with this storm. But they realize it's a fact of life. You know, only five people lost their lives here in this part of the state, and they realize that it could have been much, much worse given the severity of the storm. So they're quite thankful that their lives are intact, because everything else can be rebuilt.
Russell Lewis from Kansas Public Radio. On Wall Street at this hour, the Dow Jones Industrial Average has fallen more than 81 points to 10,804. Trading is active. The Nasdaq Composite Index is down more than 44 at 2440. This is NPR.
Support for National Public Radio comes from Borders.com, putting a world of books, music, and videos at your fingertips. www.borders.com.
Good morning. With news from Minnesota Public Radio, I'm Tim Pugmire. Officials from the northern Minnesota town of Squaw Lake say at least for now the town will keep its name despite objections from many on the Leech Lake Reservation. Minnesota Public Radio's Tom Robertson reports from Bemidji.
Loosely translated, the word squaw in Ojibwe means prostitute or refers to female anatomy, and many on the Leech Lake Reservation consider it a derogatory term to Indian women. In 1994, several high school students on the reservation lobbied successfully to have the word removed from 16 geographic locations throughout Minnesota, but the legislation did not include names of towns. After meeting this week with the reservation committee, the Squaw Lake City Council took no action on adopting a new name. City officials say the change would be costly, and they say most of the town's residents are opposed to the proposal. Discussions between the two groups are expected to continue. In Bemidji, I'm Tom Robertson, Minnesota Public Radio.
Bloomington police say the woman who was apparently killed at the Mall of America appears to be a teenager. Authorities found a woman stabbed to death on the first floor of the mall about 10 last night. Police in Minneapolis arrested a male suspect about an hour and a half later. Neither the victim nor the suspect have been identified, but police say the two knew each other and the crime does not appear to be a random slaying. The state forecast today, scattered showers along with a few thunderstorms, especially in the north, highs mainly in the 60s. In the Twin Cities this afternoon, occasional showers and occasional thunderstorms. Some storms will have hail, highs in the mid to upper 60s. Around the region at last report, Rochester 62, St. Cloud 60, Duluth 53, and the Twin Cities 62. That's news from Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Tim Pugmire.
NPR's Main Street Radio coverage of rural issues is supported by the Blandin Foundation, committed to strengthening communities through grant making, leadership training, and convening. Good morning, and welcome to a special Main Street Radio broadcast from the campus of St. Cloud State University. I'm Rachel Reby. The ethnic landscape of rural Minnesota is changing as more minorities move out state. Today on our two-hour special, we'll talk about how towns across the state are handling this new diversity. St. Cloud, once an almost all-white rural community, is evolving into a more urban, ethnically diverse area. With the growth has come an increase in reported incidents of racism. Our guests this morning are Rolanda Mason, a lawyer who's handling a number of racism cases for St. Cloud Area Legal Services, Taye Retta, St. Cloud resident who serves on the State Council for Black Minnesotans, and Susan Eney, the executive editor of the St. Cloud Times. Good morning to all of you.
Good morning.
We'd also like to welcome our audience here at Atwood Memorial Center on the St. Cloud State University campus. And listeners, our phone lines are open for your questions and comments. You can reach us today at 1-800-537-5252. That number again is 1-800-537-5252 if you would like to join our conversation. In the past several years, much attention has been focused in this community on the problem of racism. We would like to start by asking our panel if you feel that any progress has been made. Taye, you want to start with that question. From your point of view, do you feel like any progress has been made in the fight against racism?
In the last 20 years, I think there was a time when things were moving up, were getting better. Lately, in the last 6-7 years, I think things have been going down. In fact, I would like to congratulate you for coming to the St. Cloud, looking for the problem, because we tried to talk to the communities, to the leadership, to the city, to the university, and to the churches and other organizations. People have been running away; they don't want to face the problem. As a result, the race situation has become worse. People in the college here, students are scared to death. Minority students are afraid to walk around. In the city, the police harassment, five years ago we did a survey, 87% of the African-American population said they were being harassed by the police. And things are really growing worse. At one time, though, things were growing better. Even in fact, now what I see is I received a letter from the mayor saying that I'll tell the neo-Nazi shop. I never knew a neo-Nazi called shop. Such a letter comes. And then friends of mine get calls saying that the malcontents, they name us. It shouldn't be that way. What we want them to do is to come and talk. We can find a solution to the problem together. And there is no reason you came here. They could have come here, too.
Susan Eney, you're executive editor of the St. Cloud Times. From your perspective, your paper is certainly filled with incidents of community people coming together to talk about racism. Do you think there's progress being made?
Well, I don't have the same perspective as Ty does, simply because I haven't been in the community 20 years. I've been here 2 years. So my perspective is a little bit different. I was here when the older mayor was here, and Larry Meyer took over as mayor. And there was a definite change there as far as what Mayor Myers is trying to do. He has reached out to certain groups in the community. He's approaching it in a way that may not satisfy every group out there. He's definitely approaching it from an education standpoint. President Bruce Gruby from SCSU has also taken it on as a mission to do something about it. Once again, whether it's satisfying all sectors of the community and approaching it, I couldn't say.
But it is a topic of conversation.
Definitely a topic of conversation. I don't think there is one way to approach it. I think it's going to have to be approached by a lot of different people in a lot of different ways to make any gains. And from my perspective, from other communities where I have lived, I see a lot more discussion going on in St. Cloud than those other communities, and I think that's a positive. Whether we can go faster, do more, yes, definitely.
Rolanda, your thoughts?
Well, I agree with Susan in that there is increased dialogue, and that can only be positive. I kind of fall somewhere in the middle between your other two guests. I've been in St. Cloud about 11 years. When I first came, in the first few years that I was here, I think there were lots of incidents of racism. I think there were some real horrible things happening to people. But I think that, by and large, most of the population of St. Cloud was unaware of those instances. So I think that some of the community-sponsored events to encourage people to talk about their experiences, it can only be helpful. The more the public as a whole is aware, the more we can take steps to address that. I also agree with Susan in that we probably aren't yet doing enough, and just because we're talking more and because there are some new initiatives in the community, we can't be fooled into believing we've done now everything that we need to do. The statistics and the stories that Ty relate are very real, and they're very heart-wrenching. And as long as those stories persist in our community, we know we're not doing enough.
And although this conversation is taking place on the campus of St. Cloud State University, we do not have a representative from the University of Administration with us today. They were asked to be part of our discussion and declined. St. Cloud Mayor Larry Meyer was also asked to participate in our show and talk about his initiative for racial harmony, inclusiveness, and equal opportunity. He chose not to be a part of this conversation as well. Our phone number, 1-800-537-5252. Does it concern you that some of the major players to come together around the table are not here?
I think there is some dialogue, as they said, that's going on. And it does concern me that these major players, like the university being the major employer around here, is not here, and the city, who that has no record for employing any minority, like in the police force, or out of the 378 city employees having not even one person of color except interns, and they put them up as their model employees. The dialogue that is going on is between themselves. I don't want somebody else to discuss and give me my rights. I want to be part of that discussion. That's where the difference is. If a group of the dominant group, if a group of white people discuss and tell me, we are going to solve your problem, how can they solve? Because they don't know my pains, because they don't understand what's going on. They hire even outsiders, like hiring a hired gang, black people. They don't want to talk to the local people. We have to be able to talk together, because as reasonable human beings, there is no reason that, you know, why we shouldn't be discussing these problems. That is the difference. They discuss it among themselves. They have set up committee after committee, even after the hearing of minorities. You know what the mayor said? I'm not going to come up with a law. The community is going to solve it. These communities don't know what's going on, don't understand what's happening among the minority communities. That is where things are missing.
Ladies, do you agree, disagree?
Well, I I do agree that any solutions or any progress that we make as a community has to be a community effort, and all segments of our community have to be involved. And to the extent that, any segment of the community is not asked to the table, I think that pulls into question the effectiveness of whatever that group or committee would try to implement.
We're going to go to our phone lines. Ray from Clear Lake is standing by. Ray, good morning.
Good morning.
Your question or comment?
Well, it was a comment. Basically, it seems like this community, I'm actually just recently moved here, and it seems like the community is pretty much accepting, but it seems they're more reactive than proactive when it comes to racial situations or controversies. I think that if there were something in the news or a serious issue that we could pinpoint, the administration would be there and the mayor would be there. And unfortunately, it seems that they're not. It's not an agenda until it's not an issue until it becomes an agenda, a serious agenda for them. That's all I really wanted to point out.
Thank you for your comment today. We're moving now to Brooklyn Park, where Michael is waiting on the phone. Good morning, Michael.
Hello. My name is Michael, and I'm an academic advisor at Twin Cities Community College. And many of my students I work with want to transfer to SCSU, but I want to ask the panelists if they think the students of color of mine who I work with that want to transfer to St. Cloud, if they'll be safe there. And also, I was surprised that NPR didn't ask professors such as Buster Cooper or Michael Davis or student activists to be on the panel, because I think they would have brought a lot of richness to the discussion.
Let's address the question. Do you think students of color would be comfortable coming to St. Cloud, to the community, and coming to this university?
I would say yes, because the more in numbers in St. Cloud, the better it would be for all of us. I'm looking at it from a different angle. Individuals are not very happy, are not very comfortable. It is a sad story in St. Cloud. The campus, though it is part of the community, lives on its own as if it is a camp, a military camp, you know, isolated, separated from the community. Even their professors don't participate and share in the community situations here. But if we get students, Michael, I think it would be good, because the more in numbers, the more of us in St. Cloud, the better it would be, because people would be learning and people will stand together. You know, people have to work together, because there are some vicious attacks taking place on students. The security in the campus itself is very concerned about it. So.
Although, Taye, this is an interesting point. You said that you came here 20 years ago, and as we've seen the minority population increase, as it has dramatically in the last 5 or 6 years, the minority population at the public school has almost tripled, and yet that's the same period of time where you said things have gotten worse.
This is very interesting, because people have come from Chicago, from Detroit, from Milwaukee, from northern Minneapolis. You know why? They have been running away from bullets. They have been running away from the gangs and drugs. We don't have those as much here. But here, what really gets you is the subtle discrimination, is the institutional discrimination, is the inability to get any jobs. We don't have a single person of color in the police force, no employee in City Hall out of 400 people, 378 people. We don't have any. Look at the schools. We have only two black teachers, and one of them was hired only this year until now. Out of 1,000, there was only one black teacher. Look at the Asian community. They are not participating. They are not being allowed to participate. There is a new bus company coming, the Flyer bus company. All those that have been hired until now are non-people of color. You see, these are the things. So those people run away from the bullet, but it doesn't mean you have to live under oppression, under subtle discrimination, under institutional discrimination in St. Cloud.
Rachel, yes,
I was going to say, the caller indicated that his students had a fear for their safety if they came to SCSU. And when I think about that, I think about their mental safety. I mean, things will definitely be different than that, but their physical safety at SCSU, I mean, from what I remember in the paper, there haven't been incidences of people being physically attacked because of their color. I don't think it's that kind of a fear as much as maybe the caller and his students think.
Lucy Kamalo has just joined us. You are Director for Multicultural Services at St. Cloud Technical College. You are a man of color. You also went to this university, so perhaps you could shed some light on this question. The question came from a man who works at a community college in the Twin Cities, asking for his students that are interested in coming here, his students of color, would they feel safe here? Would they be comfortable here?
Well, thank you. Thanks again for inviting me to be part of this program. That's one of the issues. I did not actually hear the question itself, so I'm just taking it from as you say. The issue of safety goes beyond just mental, simply because also my personal experience is when I was leaving the education building, and the white woman called me both a nigger and told me to go back where I came from, but I hadn't done anything to her. The point is that, had I been angry as I should have and reacted automatically, in other words, I cannot react because already I fit a profile of a man who is black, and automatically I'm violent. So it does come to the issue of physical safety because already I become a criminal. And also a women beater. I mean, the list just continues. On the other hand, I would also be the same person to say that as people of color, we've gone through a lot of obstacles. And I'm not saying that there should be more being put on, but I'm just saying that we should be also being the type of people who we have overcome. The fact that each time I see a black person anywhere, I say, oh, the tough ones made it because we're here because we're tough.
You see, Rachel, what you hear is there are some people that have been here for a long time, and they tell you things are changing. There are 12 people employed in professional positions in St. Cloud. 12 out of 1,500, out of 2,000, what does that mean? And then what happens is it's not only individual physical threats that exist around here. It is the departments. I have letters, bunches of letters, where departments discriminate because you are a person of color. I think we might be getting some calls, but it is pretty bad. And I know when Robert Bass was the president, situations were improving in this town. But now, the last 4 years, 5 years, it has been really going bad. Because they talk a lot. They say, we are changing it, we are doing this, and they publish a lot. But in actuality, nothing is happening.
And Rolanda Mason, you talked about your office handling perhaps as many as a dozen cases of racism at this given time.
That's correct. We represent, we have a couple of different projects that deal with racism. The one that I'm personally involved with is the Fair Schools Project, where we represent students and their families in grades K through 12 who may be experiencing racism in the school. And I think that Lucy's comment was exactly reflected in a lot of the cases that we see. We see students who are daily or regularly subjected to incidences of verbal harassment or very subtle instances of intimidation, and ultimately they may react in a way that is more aggressive or violent, and then they are perceived as the instigator. And the punishments for any kind of violent activity is much more severe than the punishments that may be there for verbal harassment, especially if that harassment isn't as identified as racial. And so oftentimes we hear from parents and from students feeling so frustrated because they don't feel protected in the school in terms of the things that are said to them or the way they're treated between classes or in the halls, and yet when they feel compelled then to react to protect themselves, then they are targeted as the one who has acted inappropriately.
Our phone lines are open today. The number, if you would like to join our conversation, is 1-800-537-5252. I'm Rachel Reby, and the show is coming to you from the Atwood Lounge at St. Cloud State University. And we do have an audience, and they have questions and comments as well. We'd like to talk to Tom Rottademi, who is a professor of human relations and multiculturalism at St. Cloud State. Sir, your question or comment?
My comment has to do with my work at St. Cloud State for the last 10 years. I want to first of all thank NPR for doing a superb job with the Crookston North Minneapolis connection, and I think you need to do a more exhaustive job in St. Cloud, but I want to honor the fact that you're trying to do something, and I want to thank Rachel Reby for that and NPR. Secondly, I want to also say the problem that we have here is we don't have honest dialogues on race in St. Cloud yet. Because if we did, the table would have been, the people that have power would not define who is a reasonable person to talk to and who is not. If both are de Klerk later on and the people in the Afrikaner Party chose to talk to the ANC because they want to solve the problem, there is no reason why people of color who have been fighting for racial justice on this campus and the people who have power, whether it's the mayor or the president of the university, cannot get on the table and have an honest dialogue.
And so your situation is that you would like to come to the table, nobody's invited you to come in with your opinion.
And what it is when it's all control, I feel control right now, it's managed. What we are suffering from in St. Cloud is image management and white terror. White terror in the sense that racism happens to children, young and old, but we have a whole bunch of image management that has happened in 5 years. And just like an alcoholic family, you've got people who are suffering from alcoholism and who are dying, and then you've got the codependents, and then you've got the problem children. The problem children are the whistleblowers. Taye Retta has been defined as a problem child in the sense that he has talked about racism, and then he gets invisibilized. What I'd like to see happen, and I want to end, I know the microphone is being grabbed away from me, so there's control here, but what I want to say happen is an honest dialogue on racism with a strategic planning to deal with it. Strategic planning means strategic assessment tools on police harassment, strategic assessment tools on employment, strategic assessment tools on student retention, faculty retention on campus, on defining racism, not calling it diversity. Everything that's discussed is watered down on campus, and that's the problem we have. We have a lot of watering down of issues, and then safe people are called to the table, and the definition of safe is people that don't talk about the problem. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Our phone number again, 1-800-537-5252. And the microphone wasn't being grabbed away from you. It was just being held by our producer, which is what we'll do with the audience participation today. Let's go on with our phone calls. We have Dana in Eagan standing by. Good morning, Dana.
Good morning. What I'd like to say is that talk is cheap. You don't even have to go to St. Cloud, Minnesota. You come to Eagan, Minnesota. You can call it Eagan, Alabama. We've experienced hate crimes. We have death threats. Is throwing their fist in my son's face, saying, don't mess with Americans. As a Muslim, I am tired of this. Every day we go outside, we go for walks, go back to your country, death to Muslims. My son went to the public school, even the middle school public school minority principal violated my son's Fifth Amendment rights. And we have proof of it on copy, as well as hard audio tape, where she says, told my son to go get the letter and steal it out of his briefcase and bring it to her, the original copy. My son didn't. You want to know something? We took it to human rights. We took it to attorneys. We took it everywhere. $11,000 in debt. And guess what? Nobody's done anything. Minnesota writes about it. They talk about it. They water it down a great deal. But when it comes to actually prosecuting people for these crimes, they don't do anything about it. It's just like my son said, Minnesota is the best racist state in America. And he put that on his test for the, when he had a state of Minnesota test in fourth grade. My children now go to the Islamic school. And the school, public school system has done everything to get my sons kicked out of the Islamic school because they want them back so they can make them special ed students. Not because of their academic, it's because they want to cover it up. We've been told here in Eagan, the whiter the righter by the cops. We go, yes, It's your kids. It's you guys. It's not us. We're not the problem. It's you guys.
Dana, what do you see as the solution? What do you see as the solution or the beginning of the solution?
Prosecution. I mean, we need to prosecute these people for the crimes committed. Otherwise, they know. Guess what? As on the John Ravey show a year ago when they had the National Hate Crime Summit, his one guest speaker, she said, if there's hate crimes in Minnesota, they go unreported. They don't go unreported. They go shoved into dirty little closet. No one wants to talk about what goes on here in Minnesota. They just want to cover it up. I called Care 11 when they were talking about what happened in Littleton. Guess what? They never call me back.
Dana, I'm going to have Rolanda Mason address this. Rolanda, let's talk from your position. And again, you work with the project that is allowing you and another attorney at St. Cloud Area Legal Services to address these cases of racism with no regards to people's ability to pay. Is that going to help? She talks about being $11,000 in debt and still going no place with this.
I certainly hope it's going to help. That's our intent. Our office generally represents low-income people, and so there's no requirement that those people pay for our services. Like any program that's available to the low-income community, there's a ceiling for that. And so there are certainly families that would fall sort of above that may very well find themselves not being able to access programs such as ours. But what we hope to do is provide representation to people who wouldn't be able to go out and hire that representation, and to focus primarily on instances of racism, as I said, in K through 12.
Do you feel like you've made any progress? This is a very discouraging story that she tells about of trying and trying and trying and getting no place.
And it's a story that I hear repeated daily from the clients that I work with. I think her experience is probably very reflective of the experience of a lot of families in the past, in that the systems that are in place are held often in the hands of the people you're having the conflict with. If there are processes available in the school system to address issues of racism in the school, the people who know about that, for example, are the school administrators, who are the people you are in conflict with. So it can be a very intimidating process. What we hope to do through the Fair Schools Project is to level that playing field a little bit, to give parents and students an access to another source who can talk with them about what that process is, to help them access it, to help them go through that process. And if appropriate, if the process that's available through the school system fails them, doesn't work, then to bring those redresses through the court system if that's appropriate.
We're talking about racism in the St. Cloud community with our guests, Taya Retta, Rolanda Mason, Susan Eni, and Vuzi Kamalo. I'm Rachel Reby, and you're listening to a special Main Street Radio broadcast from the campus of St. Cloud State University. NPR's Main Street Radio coverage of rural issues is supported by the Blandin Foundation, committed to strengthening communities through grant-making, leadership training, and convening. We'll be back with more of Main Street after a look at news and weather.
I'm Lorna Benson on the next All Things Considered. As Rochester's minority population has grown, immigrants have endured taunts and violence.
I just couldn't take it, you know, and just one of them said something to me, and then I responded like in a way that I knew I shouldn't respond.
Rochester city leaders have made an effort to put race on the agenda with mixed results. Tune in for our series, The Hidden Rainbow, The Changing Face of Minnesota, on the next All Things Considered, weekdays at 3 on Minnesota Public Radio.
Good morning, I'm Tim Pugmire with an update from Minnesota Public Radio. Rescue crews got there within 15 minutes of the crash, but U.S. officials say the two American Apache helicopter pilots were already dead. Today's crash in Albania marks the first U.S. casualties of the mission against Yugoslavia. President Clinton says America's prayers are with the families. The president is continuing his efforts to rally the troops for the Kosovo mission. He stopped at one U.S. base in Germany to give a pep talk today and heads to another to have dinner with the soldiers. It's another painful day of picking up the pieces for tornado victims across the plains. Texas and Arkansas are the latest states to get hit. The twisters roared through yesterday, killing one person in Texas and injuring 11 others. More than 100 homes in both states were damaged or destroyed. Students at Columbine High School are said to be singling out another possible gunman. The sheriff tells the Denver Post that witnesses agree on the identity of the third person who may have been involved in the shooting. He says the suspect has been interviewed.
In regional news, three tobacco trial jurors stand to divide about $30,000 to cover financial hardships. The Minnesota House approved a plan to pay for closure costs, lost overtime, and other fees the jurors suffered during the four-month trial last year. State transportation officials have pledged money and political backing for light rail projects in St. Paul. It's part of an effort to ensure broad support for mass transit in the Twin Cities metro area. Under the agreement, the state would give up to $12 million in federal money to Ramsey County for transit projects over the next 2 years. The forecast for the state today, scattered showers along with a few thunderstorms, especially in the north. Highs today mainly in the 60s. At last report, in Fargo, 63, Rochester, 65, St. Cloud, 61, and in the Twin Cities, 62. And that's the latest news from Minnesota Public Radio.
In the past 20 years, over 9,000 refugees from places like Vietnam, Bosnia, Cambodia, Ethiopia, and the former Soviet Union have moved to rural Minnesota. How have they been accepted? We'll talk about that next hour, but first we're continuing our conversation about how St. Cloud is coping with racism. Our guests for this discussion are Vuzi Kamalo, Director for the Multicultural Services at St. Cloud Technical College, Rolanda Mason, a lawyer who's handling a number of racism cases for St. Cloud Area Legal Services, Taye Retta, a St. Cloud resident who serves on the State Council for Black Minnesotans, and Susan Eney, Executive Editor at the St. Cloud Times. We are going to go to our phones, and then we'll be right back to talk to some students from St. Cloud State University who are in our audience right after Curtis from Minneapolis has a chance to give his comment. Good morning, Curtis.
Good morning. I'd like to know, you know, how can you not know that there's discrimination and racism in all phases of this system? You have no black people or any person of color in the fire department, the police department, the administration of the school. Basically, this is a whitewash. You guys got this feel-good attitude. I'm originally from Georgia, and even in Minneapolis, I find that black people will go along with the white rhetoric that everything is okay. They'll talk about it, sing about it, but there's really nothing that we can do about it because you guys who are white hold that type of power. The fear that you command in the NAACP and the Urban League and all of these places where you are given money to keep these people quiet is what keeps this atmosphere going. You know it. I know it. Basically, the whole state of Minnesota knows it. All we are doing here is talking. We talk in terms of solution. You really don't want a solution. This is the atmosphere. And this is how things are going to continue to go until something actually happens and someone explodes. But then again, if it happens to be a black person or a person of color who explodes, we get the rhetoric from the white community about, oh, this is how they were raised and blah, blah, blah. But if you're a white gunman who murders and slaughters innocent people, we turn around and say, gee, you know, this is the product of society. The school system didn't work. We find excuses for white America's hatred of not only black people but of itself, because they're living in denial and fear.
Let's give our panelists a chance to respond. Vuzi Kamalo, you want to address that? Your thoughts about what he's saying?
Yeah, I mean, I concur with what the caller is saying. One of the bigger issues that we find ourselves in is the reality of the fact that people of color should be the ones understanding. See, how do you ask, a person who's a victim in this case to understand? How can you ask me, if you come to me, you rape me, then you come to me and say, then people, the society will come and say, you need to understand, these people have never seen it. But that is so rude, and that is just crude. And I can understand, the pain that comes from there, because it's something that happens, and every time the kind of support that we get, I hope you'd understand, I hope you not make a big deal, I hope you're not generalized. Whereas the very act in itself, it suggests a lot of generalization that has occurred. One thing that I would like us to encourage ourselves, though, I'll say it's as people of color. One of the things that, let's continue to fight and to fight the power I believe in that. I also believe that let's continue to invest on our own kids and our own people, making sure, ensuring that our children of color, as they grow up, they have identity. They know who they are and they are proud of who they are. So that whatever happens in the way, they have tools to be able to deal with those kind of situations. Rather, I mean, because we can spend, it's good, we can spend all the time fighting somewhere out there, the other wing, let's invest on our kids.
We're going to our audience now. We have Ray Shorter in the audience, who is a student here at St. Cloud State University. Ray, your comment?
Well, I'm a graduate student in the Applied Psychology Department at St. Cloud State, and for the last year, I've been dehumanized, belittled, and literally raped of my mind and spirit in that department by racial attacks by white students as well as white faculty in that department.
Ray, let's talk specifically about some of those attacks. What has specifically happened to you on the part of students and on the part of faculty?
Well, there's a whole list of things that has happened in the classroom settings. It seemed like for one example, in one of my classes, when I told the students, I was talking about different cultural perspectives in terms of psychology. And many of the students started to yell at me and telling me they don't care about other cultures, they don't care about what I'm talking about. And my point with them, if they're not invested in terms of learning about different cultures, then they can't provide therapy with them. And I was told that as they continued to attack and yell at me, I mean literally yell at me, I decided to get up and leave. And my professor, Dave Lessard, told me to continue to walk, continue to leave as I'm walking through the door, just continue to walk out and don't come back, because I will not allow these white students to start yelling at me like I'm some type of animal or something. But though it's been a history of that happening to me all this year in practically all of my classes, it's been well documented. President knows about it, the deans knows about it, but no, I had to suffer for a whole year. And finally now people are thinking about doing something, which I still don't know what it is, but I've talked to these people countless amount of times, but for a whole year I still suffer, and to this day it's a lot of retaliation that's going on that everyone knows about, but there's nothing getting done.
And so this conversation about mandatory classes for every St. Cloud State University student to raise their consciousness on the issue of racism, and cards that have been passed out to students say, if you see racism taking place, if you see this sort of thing, report it. You're saying that has not worked.
No, it's not as worked. It's well documented in terms of applied psychology. They have a history of it. And currently, for a whole year, somebody can investigate and you find all kinds of stuff. I've already got an affirmative action complaint as well as other complaints against them, so it's no surprises out there. But they have continued even now to retaliate against me as a result of me being a conscious black man, standing up and trying to talk about the concerns and perspective of other people of color and not have to be adapted to a white oppressive structure. So I won't allow it, but it's a lot of retaliation, and no, nothing is getting done about it. They're allowing it to happen. That's why I continue to suffer as a result.
Thanks for sharing your story. We have another student from St. Cloud State University in our audience, Lance Gibson. Good morning, Lance.
Hi, how are you doing? Let's see, I come from Minot, North Dakota, and that place is an extremely racist place, and I partially left there to try and not fall into the same trap, and unfortunately I came to a place that was much worse than Minot, North Dakota. Obviously, you can see St. Cloud's investment in dealing with racism. Where is the administration? They're not here. Where's the city officials? They're not here. His initiatives about taking care of racism, well, there have been neo-Nazi groups up in St. Cloud distributing flyers since last summer. And just recently, a man in the spring semester got attacked by the neo-Nazis, like $6,000 damage to his car. And people are still, you know, Larry Meyer, well, I have initiatives on race relations. No, he doesn't. If he did, he'd be here. And see, we do have something in place at St. Cloud to maybe take care of some of the racism and some of the oppression here. It's called the Human Relations Department. And what they're trying to do to that department is destroy it. They're, like, attacking every teacher in the Human Relations Department, destroying the courses and the requirements. And that department is probably one of the structural frameworks that could work towards eliminating these oppressions, and they want to tear it down.
And your solution, Lance, would be what?
My solution, well, I would like to focus more, since I'm a white person. There are so many complacent white people in St. Cloud. Everybody does not want to see the racism here. Oh, tucktail, there's no anti-Semitism, there's no sexism, blah, blah, blah. They want to close their eyes and be blind and just kind of go through the motions. And they have no investment. They think everything is okay. They have this false illusion of racial harmony, and thus they don't think they have to do any work. I will say to you that I think I would actually appreciate the overt racists who can come up and at least say how they feel, whereas the complacent white racists who don't say anything and just keep their eyes shut and walk around knowing all this stuff is happening and still don't do anything, they're the racists, like the administration here, like the city. They're not doing anything. You got police here that continuously harass people. It's like DWB, driving while black. You'll get pulled over. You can't go in a store without being looked at different. And see, people don't understand. People think people got to say things to you, come up and physically attack you. But please don't cut me off. 90% of communication is nonverbal. It's body language. Look at that.
Let's give our panelists a chance to respond. Lance and Ray, thank you for your comments. Vuzi, you told me yesterday that the biggest enemy are white liberals. What did you mean by that?
You know, it's just sickening to listen to white liberals telling me how I should feel about certain things, how I should have reacted, how I should have demonstrated that I was in pain. Look here, I've been black all my life, and I know exactly how I demonstrate what I'm feeling. This is not to negate what Lance is saying. In fact, because what he's saying, as a matter of fact, is true. I have no idea why. I would say St. Cloud administration is not here. I have no idea why, whatever reasons they are. But I would like, since I came to St. Cloud, I started in 1990, they've been talking about talking. We've been talking about talking and talking and talking. And today, we're still talking.
About talking.
And we're still thinking, it should be a good idea to have dialogues. Okay, fine. And we're having dialogues. You see, this is not just an attack. It's just an observation. What is it that we're doing? Yes, I've been involved in some other dialogues. I'm involved also in bringing Dr. Banks in campus because we believe in because I believe it's multicultural education is essential. Otherwise, people get who graduate as educated weaklings.
So, talking may not solve everything or anything, but you need to keep talking.
Deliver. Let's deliver. We've been making promises, and let's identify what the issue is. Okay, fine. We know racism is the issue. Let's call everybody into the bargaining tables. Find what the issue, how we go about delivering. I think one of our mistakes also we spend more time blaming, of which yes we can do, and we're justifiable to blame everybody. On the other hand, when you blame everybody, everybody else is so tainted that everybody else is afraid to do anything because they don't want to get involved. And I wish people would get a conscience and get involved.
Tyretta, you wanted to
say
what?
You know, this talking thing, Dana from Egan mentioned it, now Buzi is talking about it. And people tell you, we have to talk. Who is talking? It's people, that group only that's talking. Maybe they would have some Uncle Toms from among our own community. You know the term Uncle Tom? You know, those who agree with them in everything, or those that have been bought. There is a person hired, like a hired gun, who is going to come and solve all our problems. It was in the news only last week. What is she going to solve?
So you're not impressed with a consultant being hired to figure out what the racial climate is?
We are people, very reasonable people. Woozy is reasonable. I am reasonable. Everybody else is. We can talk and solve the problem. There was a person that was that we brought, a community judge from Chicago for the Midwest area. He came and told them, you have to show a bottom line. You have to show that you have hired policemen, you have hired teachers, you have hired company people, you have hired institute hall, you know. Rachel, it is so white. It's so glaringly white. I mean, you can't see. I mean, you need some people of color, and this is by right. People have worked to develop this country to the level it is. People run away. Families have had to run away in some cases, you know. I'm not saying that they should run away. People, children, you know, people have to run away with their children. So I think the problem, the solution would be talk to the families, and the families, the minority communities, and that is the only way you could bring about a change, not selectively, not by excluding some, not by hiring hired guns anyway. Thank you.
I'm Rachel Reby, and we are broadcasting from the St. Cloud State University campus. This is a discussion on racism in St. Cloud. Pastor Katie Schneider Bryant is in our audience. She is the pastor at the First United Methodist Church, which is very close to the St. Cloud State University campus. Pastor Schneider Bryant, tell us what place the community of faith has in identifying the problem and in solving the problem.
Well, I think that the community of faith has to always come from an attitude of hopefulness. And I think as we hear this conversation, we can become so discouraged that we can't do enough, that we can't take stands, that we can't effect change. And so I think first of all, as people of hope gather, you know, as faithful people, that then we begin to make a difference and to listen to each other, to be in dialogue. We've talked about talking and talking more talk, but one of the things that I'm excited about here in St. Cloud, and it's a small baby step, but I think it's an important step as I'm working with my congregation and other congregations, faith-based communities, in what's called the Great River Interfaith Partnership. And we are gathering across different denominations and faith communities to say, what are the issues in this community that we need to address? And one of the first steps was for within those congregations to intentionally have interviews with various people in the community as well as within our membership to ask, what are you concerned about? What are you frightened of in our community? What do we need to address?
Is racism a big issue in the minds of your congregation?
Yes, I think it is. And I think that what we see is that you cannot simply address it as an issue, but that it's woven into everything, and that congregations need to also assess how we are part of the problem and to face it head on and to talk about it and then to take some actions. And this Great River Interfaith Partnership is part of that first baby step to effect some change.
You talked about pamphlets being distributed in the neighborhood where the church is located.
Yes, that was spoken of early. I think Lance was mentioning that. And there was an outcry within our own congregation, people saying this cannot happen here.
And tell me what sort of pamphlets came around. What kind of literature?
Well, they were neo-Nazi pamphlets that were basically attacking anyone who was not white and saying that, you know, join us. And the response was to say, not in our town. And while there's never enough being done, I think for us as people of faith, we are saying we have to do something, and we will do what we can in small steps, in dialogue and working together.
Thank you. We're going back to our phones. Dave in Blaine is patiently waiting by. Good morning, Dave.
Yeah, good morning. I've been listening to this dialogue for a little bit, and it's, you know, I'm astounded at how much racism has been, you know, going on in St. Cloud. But, you know, I come from a different perspective. I'm a junior at Metro State, and, you know, we have all these African-American and Asian groups on campus. You know, my perspective is probably much different. But in one way, you can maybe to advance, I mean, maybe European-American perspective for giving them their own group on campus, maybe. I noticed with a lot of racial tension that's being spurred is because you have all these different separate groups, and they raise their own, you know, racial consciousness. I think it would be rational to maybe give it to European Americans. I'll hang up. Thanks.
Lucy, what do you think about that? Do we need a white group on campus?
We already have them. I don't need to say more than that. We already have them. They exist. And the very fact that we're talking about these issues right now, they're in power, they're in control, and those are the people who are manipulating all the issues that what you're talking about. And also people that end up talking about on operating on fear. So I don't need to say more on that. They already exist.
Let's go back to the phones. Tunde in Plymouth is standing by. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. I just have a few points to make. And I must commend this program. I'm fortunate to have followed halfway. But I just have five few comments to make. One is the peaceful approach. I know no one's fighting now, but let's look at those black leaders who have impacted the lives of minorities in this generation. Look at Mandela and Martin Luther King. They preached a peaceful approach to accept even those who oppressed them, you know. And then the second will be communication, and communication will be two ways. One amongst minorities themselves, in the sense that there are many things wrong with the black people themselves in our neighborhoods, but I don't blame what's going on now. I look at it as where we are at a stage in life. I've been fortunate to have lived in different countries and different different levels of awareness in terms of education, religion. I live in different circumstances, so I can see that it's like a journey from point A to point Z, and I see the black people not in the U.S. now. I don't see them as being less than the whites as people see them. I see them as people going through a phase. If you see the black folks whose parents were educated or were middle class, they give to their children just as much opportunities and training as the white folks do. And that impacts their lives, and they go on from there.
Let's get a reaction, Tunde. Taya, do you have anything that you want to say about what he's talking about peaceful solutions, not-so-peaceful solutions?
Peaceful solutions. I wish that was possible. Not so peaceful solution. I hope it doesn't come. What I'm looking for is for people, not outsiders. We don't even need somebody big to come here and negotiate for us. We ourselves can talk. The only thing that's lacking is the leadership. There is no leadership among the public figures. The churches have been running away. In fact, when the pastor mentioned about the GRIP, the Great River Interface, I'm one of the founders. We started it to help minorities. How are we helping minorities? None at all now. There is no, it's only to help their own community congregations. And the teachers have forgotten their obligation, that they are here for all children. They are not. There is a lack of leadership overall. And what we should do is, I think we are ready to talk for that peaceful solution. We are ready to talk. Not talk, continue talking, but to show results so that people will be hired, so that people will not be chased away from their apartments, so that people will not. I was doing a survey recently for the federal government. I was stopped by the police. I'm an old man. Is there any reason? You know, the situation around here is so bad that people have to wake up. I do have some beautiful friends, good friends. But those few that create those problems are making, and because there is a lack in the school system, the superintendent, the city hall, the police chief, there is a consortium that should be leading us, but they are leading in the wrong direction, down the drain.
Donna is on the phone with us. She's calling from St. Cloud. Good morning, Donna.
Good morning. I just wanted to share, I moved to St. Cloud a little over 20 years ago from St. Paul. And my first contact with any commerce here in town, I went to the Sears store, and the person I'd never seen before that was waiting on me welcomed me to town and told me that I would enjoy living here because I would see no dark faces on the street or something to that effect. Well, I was aghast, having just moved from an integrated area in St. Paul, and I just think this entire community is 30, 40 or more years behind socially and attitudinally than the rest of the country. And as people of color are moving in, they're more with contemporary times, and they're moving into an environment that just isn't with the times.
Rolanda, would you agree with that? Is this town really experiencing some growing pains? We said it in the introduction. This was a rural, almost entirely white community. And now we see that increase in the minority population. And are people just, is the town changing to go along with that? Or is change very difficult in St. Cloud?
Change is very difficult in St. Cloud. I think that because St. Cloud was so homogenous, that people did not recognize in themselves racism, bigotry. I think that oftentimes people think that if there aren't laws that exclude people like the old Jim Crow laws of the South, that it must mean that there's no prejudice here. And of course that's not true. And I think that as a community, we've taken a very long time in even starting to recognize the biases that the predominant culture has and brings to bear. So I would agree with the caller. I think her story is the poignant example of how far we still have to come.
Susan, do you agree with that?
Oh, definitely. As a newcomer, I know how hard change is. I've had people email me saying, get out of town. You're not welcome here. And I'm not a person of color. I cannot begin to imagine if I were. It's just, we have to be more accepting to change. We have to be more accepting of people's differences and their perspectives and what they bring to the world. We're all moving toward a more global society. St. Cloud cannot continue to be isolated the way it has in the past. We've got to move forward.
And Vuzi, in your 9 years, have you seen any positive changes here?
You know, it makes sense. It makes sense to do a lot of things. I mean, one thing that I would say is good is the fact that there are more people of color that are coming into the city, and that is very good, and I'm very proud of that. I hope people continue, and I hope we continue to contribute in the community.
So that will do something to help the change.
That's right.
I'm sorry, we're out of time. We're halfway through this Main Street broadcast from St. Cloud. Our guests this morning have been Taye Retta, a member of the State Council for Black Minnesotans, Rolanda Mason from St. Cloud Area Legal Services, executive editor of the St. Cloud Times, Susan Eney, and Vuzi Kamalo from St. Cloud Technical College. Next hour, we'll turn our attention to rural refugees, the people from war-torn countries around the world who have settled in outstate Minnesota. Some communities have welcomed these new residents, grateful for additional school students and workers for their businesses. Other towns have had a difficult time opening their doors to minorities. It's all ahead when we continue our Main Street special from St. Cloud after the news.